On today's episode of The Independent, friend of the program Mike Golic Jr. stops by the show to talk about calling Notre Dame's dramatic come-from-behind victory at Duke last week. He also looks ahead to the Louisville game and the second half of the Irish season.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Independent. I'm Pete Sampson, joined as always by my co-host Matt Fortuna. As you heard in the intro, we'll have Mike Golic Jr. on a little bit. The term touch grass was not used. I know that was a favorite of some of our listeners last year, so I don't want to leave anyone hanging on that. But Matt, Notre Dame at midseason, which still seems weird as we record this on October 3rd, but the season is half over. They're ranked in the top 10. They're sort of exactly where we thought they would be, but how they got there is not how we thought it would happen. Even though I think, look, at the beginning of the season, if you said, hey, they're gonna start 5-1, these are the five, that's the one, we all would have said, yeah, I mean, that makes perfect sense. But I think how they've gotten to this point has been pretty interesting to me, because it's not exactly what I expected.
No, not at all. And we talked about this with Mike during our conversation, but to me, it was like the optimist view out of the Ohio State loss was, you know what? We can't be too harsh on Marcus Freeman, because he got these guys ready to play and look like they not only belong, but were better than Ohio State for the majority of the game. And that's great. I think you turn around and look at Duke and say the same thing, right? Duke looked like the better team for most of the game against Notre Dame. Notre Dame obviously got a win and is not going to apologize for it. And I don't, again, this is more about brand names and perceptions, right? Hey, we're as good as Ohio State. Oh, hey, we're as good as Duke. Like, Duke's really good. Ohio State's really good. Maybe not by traditional Ohio State standards, but they're still a top 10 football team in the country that came out with a gutsy road win a couple weeks ago in South Bend. And the way this team has played, again, to kind of change its style, so to speak, right? They scored 40 or more points in the first four games to open the season. I believe that was a program record. They've proven that they can play bully ball the last 2 weeks when they needed to. And I expected more of the former than the latter, at least coming into the season. By that, I mean, you've got the best quarterback you've had here since Brady Quinn. The wideouts you expected to be at least better than last year. Now, some of that's due to injuries. But I think it's also, as great as Mitchell Evans has been, it's a little disheartening for me to look up and see he is by far the leader in receptions, by far the leader in catches, and he's missed a game. Like, you expect that with Michael Mayer in last year's receiving core. You don't expect it this year. Again, as good as Mitchell Evans has been. So it's been a bit of a different season. I don't think, like, we saw Sam Hartman look the part against subpar competition. He was fine against Ohio State. He certainly wasn't bad. But I think there was the sense of, all right, well, you've got this generational, by Notre Dame standards, quarterback. You've got an Ohio State team you can beat for the first time in a while. When are we going to see the returns of this? And you saw it last week at Duke. Like, it might not show up in the box score, but you got a quarterback who can lead you on a 95-plus yard drive when nothing has worked for you, really, since the first drive of the game offensively. That's where you see the benefits of that. They went out there. They won the game. They never flinched. Sam Hartman made most of it happen by himself. And that's where you see that really benefit yourself. I mean, you know, I went on a Louisville podcast earlier this week, and the first thing they brought up was Sam Hartman turned the ball over 6 times against Louisville last year, and Wake Forest turned over 8 times against Louisville last year. Like, what's different? Sam Hartman had one of those games, it seemed like, every year at Wake Forest. Me and you have beaten this drum ad nauseum. I don't think Notre Dame's ever going to put him in position where he even has the possibility to give the ball away that much, or the offense is a possibility to give the ball away that much. It's a completely different offense. They're asking him to do completely different things than what he was asked to do last year against Wake Forest. And I don't think we'll see one of those, you know, meltdown games, or whatever you want to call it, that Wake Forest fans saw so much last year. The guy's been the real deal. I think he has very naturally slid into the role of, like, not just quarterback of Notre Dame, but leader of Notre Dame. Like, I think he understands his role on this team. He understands, I think, even the historical context of how rare this is for this program to have a guy with that kind of experience and moxie in that position. I got asked about that too on the little podcast, was essentially, hey, Dave Clawson would always promote this guy for Heisman. He never wanted to do interviews or put himself out there. Like, how's he been at a new school where he hasn't been for 5 years. I said, I remember that too, but he's been great. Like, I think, I don't know if it's you're 24, you're a 6 year senior and the light clicks on, but I don't think he's ever not understood the responsibility of his position. And, you know, that's great for me and you to talk about Monday through Friday. But when you see what he did with the, you know, the odds stacked against him with 2 minutes ago on Saturday night in a hostile environment, there's validation there, and there's the real deal. And it makes you think anything is still possible with this team, both good and bad, but certainly good when you've got him back there.
Yeah. I don't think that he is necessarily like love the spotlight that comes with Notre Dame, but he's done more than just tolerate it. I think from the leadership point, like, he's killed that part of it. You know, he's giving Notre Dame like an alpha personality on offense that they just have not had in a long time. You know, maybe, you know, look, Ian Book won a ton of games, but I don't know if he had like an alpha personality, like in the locker room. Like, I don't know if people looked to Ian Book, you know, he could provide leadership, but I don't know if it was just sort of assumed that, all right, Ian's going to bail us out of something here. With Hartman, you get the sense that like Notre Dame's players believe like, all right, Sam, if this is going haywire, Sam can bail us out. But I think to your point about like the lack of turnovers, Notre Dame hasn't really had to ask him to bail them out, which is how you avoid throwing three picks or losing three fumbles. You know, he could have thrown a pick certainly on that game winning drive on third down right before the 17-yard scramble. So they need to be aggressive and they need to take chances. It is like, it's not a shame. That's too dramatic of a word, but it is. If you're Notre Dame, I think you got to feel a little bit bummed that there's no like Will Fuller on this roster, or even just like a Miles Boykin or a Chase Claypool, like a true number one receiver that.
Well, and he had those multiple of those every year at Wake Forest.
Yeah, A.T. Berry like would be Notre Dame's best receiver by a wide margin.
Sage Surratt looked like a first round pick for a while there. He didn't have the offensive line, which obviously is why he was under pressure a lot and has to do a lot. But it's completely different. Completely different.
I would say, you know, the thing that surprised me most defensively is just like the line has been way better than I would have expected. I thought that was going to be kind of an albatross that put a ceiling on how good Notre Dame's season could be. And look, they don't have dynamic pass rush, but they have created pressures. Like Riley Leonard's pick was not a sack, obviously, because it got picked off. But he threw it as a pick because there was pressure. Right. And I think Notre Dame's done a good job of that so far. As like their pressure numbers are actually quite good. Their sack numbers are not. But just because you don't have the second one doesn't mean the first one doesn't matter. So it's the defensive line, you know, Cross and Pello, Cross and Mills, I think on the interior have been much better than they were a year ago. And I do think it sort of gets into one of those things that I struggle with this sometimes. I don't know if other media members do, but like when you're looking at a team in the preseason and you have returning players, I don't think that we factor in like a guy going from his third year to his fourth year actually can make a huge improvement. We just focus on guys that are new. Maybe the new guy will be better than the old guy. Well, how about the older guy is better than the same guy when he was just old? And I think that you're seeing that with Cross. You're seeing that with Mills, you know, Leofau, you saw that after an off night against Ohio State, you know, and then you have guys like, you know, Xavier Watts, that's a player who was a role player who is now making a huge push to be like a legit difference maker at the back of the secondary. So it's Al Golden's having a really, really nice season. I don't know if he was fully embraced by the fan base when the season started. But I think I would hope that he would be now, because I think he's been outstanding.
Without question, biggest pleasant surprise, and this wasn't intended to be the midway season podcast, although I guess it's turning out that way since they've played six games already and have two byes coming up, which another schedule thing that just doesn't make sense to me. But the defense has absolutely been the biggest pleasant surprise. I didn't think they'd be bad, but I did not know what to expect out of that team coming into that side of the ball coming into the season, and to see them do what they did against Ohio State, do what they did against Duke for much of the game last week, and obviously against subpar competition earlier this year, it's been very, very impressive. I hope they, not that I have depth concerns about them, but again, I think they've been asked to do probably a little more than we all expected coming into the year. And so you always wonder, how does that hold up over the course of a season, especially when you're in a tough stretch like this one. But it's been very, very impressive so far, and hats off to them. And again, I think you have the freedom to play a certain way when you have the cornerbacks that you probably haven't had in a long time. I thought you were going to say it's a shame that Sam Hartman's only here for 1 year. Although I agree with you that it's a shame they don't have a Will Fuller. I do think I'll push back a little bit on what you said about him in the spotlight. And by that, I mean, like, you know, he did the game day interview with AirPods warming up at NC State.
Yeah.
I cannot ever imagine a Notre Dame quarterback that I've covered doing that, at least being comfortable doing that and not doing it in a me first kind of way. Like, it just, nor can I really imagine Notre Dame feeling like,
they did it with Mayer last year, I think.
I could see Mayer doing it.
Mayer did it.
But I could never see him doing that.
No, I mean, I don't think they've had a quarterback interesting enough to do it.
Right.
You know, Sam Hartman's got all the extra stuff happening too. Like, we have a home field ad. Like, there was never a Ian Book home field shirt, or certainly wasn't a Jack Cohn.
Wasn't NIL.
Yeah.
There was an NIL then.
So it's,
which I also think, makes me think you can maybe get another Sam Hartman next year.
Yeah. Yeah. This has got to be a very, that, this has got to be a great advertisement for, if you're a grad transfer quarterback, why coming to Notre Dame opposed to being a sixth round pick makes sense.
It's the best advertisement I think this program's had in a long time, player wise. And yeah, again, me and you
think Riley Leonard listens to the show?
Well, by the way, just to follow up on that, Pete Thamel, ESPN reported it's only a high ankle sprain. Thank God. Cause that, I mean, while that sucks, it's not career or season ending, and hopefully he heals up. And I think Riley Leonard's going to be a first round pick next year. I think this is third year, I believe, right? I think he's eligible. I think.
Yes.
He was not a true freshman last year. So yeah, I don't think he needs to worry about that, but yeah. How many times over the past years have you say, like, what's their NIL plan, or when are we going to see this in practice, or, you know, why do they seem publicly to be a little more hesitant than everyone else with this? Again, I don't know all the inner workings there. All I know is every time I go on Sam Hartman's Instagram, there's a new ad, and he's a quarterback in Notre Dame, and he's putting up big numbers, and he's winning a lot of games, and he's charismatic, and he's really, really good. And I don't know how you don't look at that and say, yeah, I want to do that. Like, oh,
I will grow a beard.
I'll make money, be the quarterback in Notre Dame, and then get drafted higher than I would have had I not come out of Notre Dame. Like, it seems pretty easy math in my estimation. But again, I think it's a great advertiser for him. Obviously, only halfway through the season. Again, you reminded me at the end of the Duke episode Saturday, like, two byes in the second half, which it just, everything about the schedule just seems weird. And again, that was not even accounting for the fact that four straight games in a row would be 7:30 against undefeated ranked teams, assuming USC stays undefeated this week against Arizona.
Couldn't you see them losing that game?
Could I see him losing that game?
Yeah.
It's at Holmes, right? So no, but I think USC is going to lose at least two games this year. And I'm saying that independent of Notre Dame. I mean, USC's second half schedule, I think, is Oregon, Washington, Utah. Three tough physical teams that match up well with USC in that regard. I mean, it just, they've got some serious, serious issues on defense that I gave them a little bit of a pass last year just because I thought they outperformed their talent by just forcing a lot of turnovers. I didn't think they had a lot of talent on that side of the ball. And maybe that's excusable in year one. It's not excusable in year two. And at some point, much like Kirby Smart had the best defense every year, but couldn't figure it out on offense until he hired Todd Monken. Lincoln Riley's going to have to, you know, it's Lincoln Riley's defense, right? At the end of the day, he's going to have to make something happen on that side of the ball to figure out how to win a national championship playing the style of offense he's played, because that's pretty much the only thing the guy hasn't done in his short coaching career so far. But we'll have plenty to talk about ahead of that game, regardless of how this game plays out and this Louisville game. And yeah, you know, I think, you know, Vegas has its interpretations of how it unfold. I think me and you probably have our educated guesses how we think it'll unfold, and yet who the hell knows?
Yeah.
After seeing the way the last 2 weeks have unfolded, it's been, these last 2 weeks alone have probably taken a few years off everyone in that organization's and everyone who covering that organization's football life, because it's been a great reality TV show, if nothing else.
Yeah. Well, before we get into the Golic interview, I wanted to hit one point that we didn't talk about Saturday after the show, but Marcus Freeman brought it up Monday when asked, and then it was also sort of in a social media video posted. Do you understand?
I know you're going to ask, and I don't.
Okay. Why you would try to kick a field goal or play for a field goal at the end of the game when your kicker is like a little iffy, opposed to relying on a 6-year quarterback with 120 plus touchdown passes?
No, I don't understand it. And even when he said it post game, I thought, yeah, like, I don't agree with that. But like, if your kicker has confidence issues, like, you got to publicly say, yeah, we trust him to win the game and we were doing this. I mean, we saw the opposite with Kyle Brinza, right? Brian Kelly came out and basically said his confidence was shot, and it was shot, but your head coach says that and you're done as a kicker. So I try to rationalize it in the heat of the moment like that, but he doubles down on it Monday. And then Monday night they put out the video, which was phenomenal. Us and Michael talk about that during our conversation. You hear Marty Biaggi saying we got to get to 37, which, again, that's his job as special teams coordinator to know what the distance is. But you hear Marcus Freeman essentially say that. And even if you want to rationalize it as, well, we want him to go down at the one and then kick it, it's like at the NFL, I'm all for that because those guys are pros and every kicker in there is, for the most part, good. College, I would have said this independent of Spencer Schrader's very choppy season so far. I just, to stake really your season on his leg at this point. And it's weird because I would almost feel like, from the 37, you got nothing to lose. And he's proven he could kick it from that far. There's like a lot less pressure versus like a 20 yard or whatever. I just, no, like you score the touchdown 10 out of 10 times. I think that's classic overthinking it. You know, especially in a game like that, it's not like the LSU Ole Miss game. Ole Miss scored with a minute or whatever left, and that game was whatever in the 50s. And that right there, I'm watching thinking, oh, they scored too soon. And sure enough, LSU got to the red zone. They just couldn't finish. Game like that, where points are so hard to come by.
Your defense is playing great. And like Riley Leonard is a good player. It's not, you're not defending Patrick Mahomes. Like,
no, and their kickers was worse. He missed two gimmies that could have made it a lot more difficult. I get when you get the ball saying, hey, we only need three here. I get that because you're deep in your own end zone. If you try to, you know, vocalize, let's go 98 yards in 2 minutes against this defense, that's a lot to kind of process. I get the...
No one wants to do the math of like, let's go 98 yards.
Right.
Minus 37. What is that?
Like, we only need three here. Takes 61, some pressure.
61. Let's go 61 yards. Like, that just doesn't... It doesn't roll off the tongue.
It reduces the pressure when you say that. But once you get that first down, yeah, win the damn game like they did. Like, did you see... All of America saw it, the Chiefs-Jets game Sunday night?
I was one of the few people that didn't.
Wow. Well, I don't know how you'll catch up on that because no one's written or said anything about it anywhere.
Was Ryan Reynolds at the game?
Including at your website. I did get a kick. Mahomes ran for a first down and slid at the one to end the game when the Jets were out of timeouts and they're up three. And yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it pissed off a lot of gamblers and fantasy football people, but like it makes sense. But I love the whole like, oh, what an unselfish act by Mahomes. He's all about the team. And it's like, he'll get so much more attention for this than he will running it in. It's like anytime a coach takes a knee at the one and people are like, oh, look how classy he is. He's not running up the score. If I'm on the other side, I'm pissed. That's more insulting to me than like you've literally ended the game than it is like just running the ball in and daring me to stop you. Like, I think the bar is so low for like class in football these days at every level that it's like, look at them, so classy. Like Sam Hartman saying for Riley Leonard, yeah, that was great. That was classy.
Yeah.
Like, so the other stuff, like, it's just, I just think we all try way too hard to overthink all these things so much. Score a freaking touchdown. You did. Thank God. Like, can you just imagine if they did put the ball in Schrader's legs and he's kicking it from at that point, probably definitely less than 50 yards and he misses.
Like, season's over. Yeah. Not great.
It's like you thought.
I'd rather not imagine that.
Right. I'm saying you thought 10 men on the field got a lot of questions. Yeah, it's I don't get it. They live to tell about it. Everything's still in front of them. Go team.
All right.
Let's get into the Michael Golick Jr. interview.
One of the best parts of starting the Independent podcast was a chance to pick the brands we wanted to work with, and Rollback was at the top of my list. As the owner of multiple polos, hoodies, Q-zips, and shorts, I can tell you the quality, fit, and feel is unmatched. You've probably seen Rollback on Audric Estime, Kyle Hamilton, and Michael Mayer. Or maybe you saw the dozen Notre Dame fans wearing the Shamrock polo at the Central Michigan game last weekend. I can tell you I saw Rollback gear in Dublin earlier this year. While the gear hasn't made me quite that athletic as those Notre Dame football players, Rollback is my go-to on the golf course, heading to the lake, watching my kids' sports, or just walking the dog. So make sure you're comfortable throughout the season with Rollback. Use code IRISH for 20% off your first purchase. That's code IRISH for 20% off all hoodies, polos, Q-zips, and more.
Hey, Pete, imagine this. Another primetime showcase for Notre Dame this week. I know just the perfect way to gear up for it.
You got to look the part if you're a Notre Dame fan, and you could do that by going to homefieldapparel.com to get all the most interesting vintage throwback looks from the archives around Notre Dame. That includes the new Sam Hartman green Victory March t-shirt. And for listeners to The Independent, you can get 10% off your first order at homefieldapparel.com. Just go to homefieldapparel.com. Use the promo code INDEPENDENT23 for 10% off your first order from the Notre Dame collection. That's homefieldapparel.com, promo code INDEPENDENT23 for 10% off your first order from the Notre Dame collection. Matt, what have you always said is my biggest weakness on fall Saturdays?
Well, Pete, I'd say your hair, but who am I to talk? Let's go with your wardrobe.
Harsh but fair.
ESQ outfits over 400 professional athletes, celebrities, and Irish players on game day with bespoke clothing that elevates their game off the field. ESQ sculpts every garment with precision, helping you look your best for work, weddings, celebrations, or in your case, Pete, the press box.
Listeners of The Independent can get 15% off their first online order by using the code IND15 at checkout. That's IND15, or visit them at their Chicago showroom for a full custom look. Head to esqclothing.com to create your perfect fit. Pleased to welcome to The Independent, Mike Golick Jr., a former guest of our former show. I think this is as bald a panel as we've had since The Independent was rebooted, so appreciate Mike getting us over the top on that one. You may have heard him on Saturday night calling the national broadcast for Learfield. I don't know. We had Ryan Harris on earlier. I don't know if you got as jazzed about what was happening as he did on the
another
call,
bald but, guy, by the way.
Yeah.
Another bald guy.
I can say bald guy and a fat guy in the booth up there. I saw Ryan in the press box before that game. I was like, man, former Notre Dame beef in the radio broadcast industry right now. Really pulsating.
Also a game where we had both Mr. Chow and the guy who played Mr. Chow. even though I don't think I ever saw you and Ken in the same place. So who's to say you're not actually the same person?
It's a fair point. It's a fair point. Yeah. No, I was bummed I didn't get to see Ken on that trip. He was electric on a game day set full of personality. He somehow managed to transcend all the rest. It's an impressive feat.
He that looked like a great environment. Oh, you two were there. And I thought Notre Dame did a really cool thing earlier this week by releasing a cut-up of kind of the coach's audio on that last drive. A lot of revelations. Obviously, it's kind of home-produced media, so it. But I will say, like, came through a lot calmer than I would have expected something like that with the stakes as high as that to be. Like, there was no panic. There was no cursing that they put out there. It was pretty smooth. Now, I would love to see the one of Ohio State because I imagine they try to do something similar if it went the right way there. But I thought that was really cool. And honestly, it gave me a different perspective and a renewed appreciation for everyone involved with that operation and how they made it work at the end there.
It's something that I hope more coaching staffs will trust their media departments with, because that's what this really relies on, right? You didn't give away any trade secrets there. No one's going to know anything special going into the next week. All these fears that so many college football programs live with. I mean, coaches are neurotic by nature, but to trust them, it does give a great insight. And honestly, I was texting with a number of guys from like different schools, former players and stuff, and it all made you miss being in the fire a little bit on that, because you got a good sense of all the things, like the two-point play being called out in the middle of that drive so that they're prepared for that, even knowing who it was going to go to, the coaching point being echoed down from everybody, telling Audric to cheat the split out to the edge because they were going to run roll out there and you wanted them to be able to set it. It's all the little moments that remind you all the preparation that goes into this. Like, I think it's an old military saying, you don't rise to the occasion, you fall to your training. That's the ultimate reminder right there, is you work all training camp, you work all during the week on all of these little details, and then it's about over-communicating them in those moments and being prepared for situations as they're getting ready to come. Like, we're a lot better in the booth at talking about that now because going forward on fourth down so prevalent that we get to remind people, hey, you know, usually the coordinator's given the go on a fourth down call pretty early in the drive so they can start to work through, hey, I'm playing with two here when I get to third down and things like that. But it applies to a lot of different things, and I think reminds us how much of coaching is the stuff underneath the water that we never see while the Ducks' legs are moving.
I mean, it's also a good reminder about how much is happening in a short amount of time with a high volume of people under incredible pressure. I'm not saying that it excuses 10 men on the field, but when people make mistakes, college players in particular, when mistakes are made in high pressure situations, I think it gives them maybe a little bit more grace when you pull back the curtain and be like, okay, you were trying to process these 87 things. Yeah. Where you can't hear the person right in front of you, and your entire season that you've been preparing 365 days for is on the line right now. Sometimes you forget to, like, you know, split it out wide or cheat the edge, like they told Audric Estime to do, or Rico Flores to get in and get out when you're a freshman wide receiver playing more snaps than you've ever played in your whole life. Yeah, it was wild. The game was wild. It was a great scene down there. I was curious what your sort of takeaway is for Notre Dame at midseason. Cause I think that they're both sort of what we thought they were, but a little different at the same time. You know, in terms of maybe some strengths and weaknesses, what is sort of your vibe on Notre Dame after six games?
Yeah. I mean, I think the easy one is, you know, Sam Hartman as advertised, right? Yeah. Like, coming up in that moment, I said as much as we were setting up that drive, is this is what you brought him over here for. So you could have confidence in a moment where you got three touchdowns, 2 minutes and the length of the field to go. Now, it didn't exactly get executed perfectly. You start off that drive with the false start and all that stuff. And pre-snap penalties were certainly the flavor of the day. But I think for Sam, cool under pressure in the biggest moments of the game were the exact thing you've expected for a guy that's accomplished as much as a passer through his first handful of games in Notre Dame history as anybody there. He's looked the part. I think we saw, you know, the depth and quality of wide receiver that was the concern going into the year with the injuries suffered going into this game. You saw the strain that put on the offense. But overall, I've been impressed with a lot of the young players that have stepped up in certain spots. The production that Notre Dame has gotten out of the units that were units we had circled as question marks coming into the season, maybe in ways that we didn't anticipate and some we did, but overall they were able to avoid the pitfall from last year. And you heard, I think, DJ Brown and a couple of the veteran players from last year talk about the Ohio State loss at the beginning of last season turning into two. And while it wasn't pretty, that's a really good Duke team. You're on the road against an opponent that was coming in with as much juice as they've ever had in the program, a really well-coached team. And you did the thing Ohio State did to you the week before. It wasn't pretty, but found a way to win in a hostile environment. And so I think there's already a lot of growth from year one to year two under Marcus Freeman in moments like that. And part of it's personnel, part of it's the coaching staff learning one year to the next and, you know, getting used to a lot of the new roles on there. But overall, feeling pretty positive through the first five games of the season.
Mike, if you could put your Domer cap on for a second, you know, I think the optimist out of Ohio State, as disappointing as the ending was, hey, look, we look like the better team on the field for 59 minutes. When could we ever say that about Ohio State? Marcus Freeman had the boys ready to play. Let's go get them. I think, like, that same line of thinking applies to this last game, right? Wait a minute. We looked worse than Duke for 59 minutes, but we came out with the win. How do you balance? Look, it's college football, right? You're going to win some games you have no business winning. You're going to lose some games you have no business losing. When you take those two games in their entirety, what kind of picture do you see moving forward for this team when they can look as good as anyone in the country and maybe not in some other points?
Yeah, you know what? I think it's a reminder that, hey, the team we saw score 40 points for the first, you know, however many games straight of the season, probably not that dominant of a team, right? On the high end of this, but Notre Dame's always had an incredibly high floor, and I still think the ceiling is in a different place because of the quarterback, because of, you know, the fact that you can strap up and play man coverage with some of the best receivers in college football. Like, I coming out of the early quarter of the season, my biggest takeaway was Benjamin Morrison's probably going to leave as the best corner Notre Dame's had in the 34 years I've been on Earth. Like, having advantages in places we haven't traditionally had them in a while has created a different dynamic around what this team is capable of doing in certain moments. But, you know, ultimately you're still, and I think it's a good reminder as, you know, you get ready for Louisville this week, you know, you got USC coming down the pipe, is you can't overlook anybody because the margin of error is still really difficult because you've got a difficult schedule this year with these road ACC games in addition to the big three games that we pointed out to start the season in Ohio State, Clemson, and USC. So it's probably a good reminder that, hey, it was fun boat racing people the first few weeks of the season, but by and large, once you get into the real games, and for both Duke and Notre Dame, you had played Ohio State and Clemson respectively, and really besides that, a lot of bad football teams up until now. And so we're starting to get a real reminder that college football is very rarely those kind of blowouts once you get into the real thick of it.
You know, the big surprise to me, and I'm curious your opinion on this as a former interior offensive lineman, if you just saw Howard Cross on the street, I don't know if you would think like, all right, I got this guy, no problem. What is it about him that has been like straight up dominant? Because you just see him physically, does not blow you away. You watch him play and you're just like, holy crap, this guy is unblockable. What, like, why is he so good? You can give us an insight of like why he's just such a pain in the ass to block.
Yeah, it is funny. You know, I think him in our D-tackle room traditionally are the reason that the Notre Dame depth chart measures heights in eighths of an inch. Because yeah. When you've got a bunch of 6'1 D-tackles, you need every bit out there.
Pete has made fine note of that on the first day of camp every single year for about 30 years.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable. And so, no, I think with Howard, it's interesting. I remember going back a couple of years to training camp. This is probably 2-3 years ago. And the buzz out of training camp was twofold. It was, hey, this Blake Fisher kid could be something. Impressive athlete, big dude. We're seeing, certainly, I think it's his best football so far this season. But with Howard, it was, we can't block this guy in camp. He's been unblockable so far. You shake his hand, you understand it really quickly. Heavy mitts on that kid. He's got bear paws on him there. Extremely active hands player. And being 6'1", it's a detriment in some ways, but it's a positive in other. Like, the low man wins thing is true. He's an unbelievable leverage player. He kind of moves like a wrestler in that he always feels like he's using his body weight against you. Extremely good lateral quickness-wise. And he's strong. Like, even at that size, you know, 6'1 and 290 pounds, whatever he is there, strength plays far outside of that with all that leverage. And so what you see is he's hard to move at the point of attack. He's really good at getting on guys' edges. And, you know, as a former interior lineman, that was always the thing I hated most. It wasn't guys that can two-gap and stay in front of you. You can work around them. There are ways to do that. Like, they're still, you know, they're still tough to move, and there's challenges there. But it's the guys that can challenge your edges and are so quick and so strong and able to get on those points, because that's what stresses the running back in the back. Those guys are looking for flashes of color. So he can really wreck things on the interior that way. And just with those unique combination of gifts really makes it a nightmare for guys. It's been fun to watch him start to get the national attention now that I think people inside the program have known about Howard for a while, which is he's a leverage nightmare with great hands and stays really, really active. I mean, plays a ton of snaps too. I think that shouldn't be lost on anyone. He's out there damn near all the time. So all that kind of works together into a really, really unique player, but uniquely effective as well.
Mike, coming into the year, I thought this schedule is a lot harder than it looks. Obviously, they're the big three, but there are some situational spots. Again, just when you look at Dublin, an option, playing the week after that, playing at NC State after that. That was before we knew they'd be playing four straight 7:30 games against four undefeated teams at the time. And you clearly see the cumulative effect of that just from last week. Marcus Freeman's press conference reaction last week when he found out Louisville was 7:30, I think, was the biggest tell in the world about
one of us.
It's we flew private too. You go to Notre Dame to play in big games like this. No one's shedding a tear for anyone there. But I mean, you played a lot of big games your last year there, particularly a lot of night games. Never like this in this kind of stretch, though. Can you speak to what you think the the mentality and the wherewithal that this entire operation has to go through really for a month straight now, playing on this stage so many weeks in a row, what that really does to take out of you. Because I think it's easy to say, oh, it's a 7:30 game. You're going to get up for that. But on Wednesday when you got to get up for class after two of these in a row, that's probably when it's going to get you.
Honestly, the best part about it is, though, they're all in a row. Like, I forget what the spread was. So we played six and then seven counting the title game. But, you know, that's a month later. So I don't really, you know, it's the national title. You'll get up for that. But we played six in the night games in the regular season that year. And I forget if they stacked up close together. But there is something to having them all in a row, because you're not like, the turnaround is still technically the same amount of time in between all those. And you get used to the schedule. Like, that's the biggest thing, is trying to create normalcy. So, yeah, on the back end, especially when you're on road trips, getting back in the early hours in the morning Sunday and then having to roll over into the training room, having to figure out what you got to do for class, having to get into film and do all that stuff. The first couple days of the week are definitely rough. But on the back end, once you get to it, it's really like anything else in college football, is how often do you have reps of going through a process? Notre Dame's got the night schedule down cold now. Like, for us, like, by the end of the year, it was a running joke. Like, when we did all the night games, I had the same schedule. Me and Braxton Cave were roommates on that one. We'd go down, we'd have all the meetings, we'd do the stuff in the morning, and then we'd have this big four-hour break in the afternoon, and we would get me, Braxton, Dane, Trevor Robinson would go down there, we'd eat barbecued chicken, macaroni and cheese, we'd finish up with milk and cookies with everybody there, and then we would go black out the curtains in the room, take like a 2.5-3 hour nap, and then we'd wake up and start the process of getting ready for everything pregame. And it's funny to look on back on now, because Dane's buttering his cookies and stuff in there, and we're all sitting around having a good time eating the snack that like 8-year-olds eat. But it was, we were comfortable with that. We kind of knew what was going on. The Dane stuff was before. He wasn't there that last year, but you get the idea. It was the same schedule that we had thrived on going into that season. We knew how to approach that. And so it wasn't this daunting thing where you're sitting around anxious all day. It's no, like, we've done a night game before. We know in this season, this is something we've done a lot of. We've gone through the mechanics of it multiple times. And so, yeah, physically it might drain on you after a while, but I do think it goes a long way, and this is now a schedule Notre Dame's football team is very used to going through, and so you don't deal with another team who might be doing it as a one-off, who's going to play one of their few night games of that year, and now their coaching staff's got to get them ready for a different game day schedule, different practice and process. Now, for Notre Dame, it's old hat at this point, and that's really the thing coaches are always striving for. It's why we would eat, you know, the same green beans, chicken, mashed potatoes, prime ribs, all the stuff on the road, is because they're just trying to replicate something similar. And now for Notre Dame, while a bit physically taxing on the back end, you do get familiarity, which breeds comfort.
What your feeling on Marcus Freeman as he's sort of grown into year two head coach? And I think that you noted something he said on Monday about when he's asked about Chris Tyree diving for that punt. You know, and Freeman said, hey, I reminded him after he fair caught it when he shouldn't, like, hey, be aggressive. And Tyree is like, all right, well, if you want me to be aggressive, I'll dive against this punt. And Freeman said it was a good reminder for him to shut up. It sounded like you felt like that goes a long way with players. Like, players notice that stuff. Is that, I don't know if that's like a growth part in year two, because I think Freeman's always sort of been that way. But how have you sort of seen him develop in year two? And then just, you know, that note on, for me to shut up is, I thought, interesting too, about like how much that actually matters in a locker room.
You know, I think as far as publicly admitting that, it's cool on a couple fronts. Cause one, Marcus still admits the stuff that he doesn't know and the stuff that he is learning. I think he's been pretty candid about that. And I don't know, there's part of that that's refreshing to see someone not presenting like they've got all the answers right now, or they're above doing things differently, but being critical about yourself, like, It's leadership rule number one. When you've got someone that's going to stand up in the locker room, whether that's a coach, your position coach, veteran team leader, when someone in that position is willing to stand up and say, hey, I got this wrong. Like, I'll, especially publicly as a player, for a coach to have your back, for a coach to go out there and say, no, this was on me. I've got to do better. People think it's cliches, but it sends a message to the rest of the locker room that accountability is our love language. This is how we get down. And so now if you're in a meeting and Marcus Freeman is the one standing up saying, yeah, I messed this up. And if you're the gunner on punt, or, you know, you're the R4 running down on kickoff and you get out of your lane or do something wrong, you're much more willing, because that's the culture of accountability to say, yeah, I got that wrong. I got to do that better. I know it's not, you're searching for an excuse because you don't want to get called out. You don't want to be the only one feeling like you're being attacked for something. It's not from everybody on down. So yeah, I think anytime anytime a leader can be publicly accountable, especially in a specific situation like that, and when you're covering for a player, you're a coach, you're in a position of power, you can correct that behind closed doors. There's part of that that Chris has to own, and he knows that. But that's for us to talk about behind closed doors. That's not for everybody else to get right now. As a leader, the thought process is always, the buck stops with me. I'll stop the deluge from the outside, and then we'll handle this behind closed doors however we see fit to get it corrected.
Mike, where do you – I think we entered this year thinking one of the strengths of this team was going to be the offensive line. I wouldn't say it's been bad by any stretch of imagination, but they've had their moments the last 2 weeks where Ohio State and Duke got the better of them. Where do you see the biggest kind of room for improvement that's actually doable and fixable in the second half of the season?
The interior guys. I mean, listen, we knew the guards coming into the season were going to be green, and we've seen that in some spots. Like, you know, it's no stranger. Mike Elko and that defense geared up a lot of their pressures to try and attack the interior of the line and do some creative stuff there. We've got two elite tackles. I thought that was honestly one of Joe Alt's best games. Like, turning that back on, and it's no surprise people are going to look up, but, you know, even amongst the Joe status of games, I thought he did some really cool stuff on tape in this game. I've been beating the Blake Fisher drum all season long. That's such an explosive athlete. But the stuff for the other guys will absolutely get better because they're just reps things, right? It's seeing things in game speed. The stuff that Mike Elko threw them on defense, even against Ohio State, you didn't really get as much galaxy brain pressure as that because they got four dudes they're comfortable cutting loose. Duke's got really good defensive linemen, especially on the interior. Like, you ran their biggest strength, their two veteran captains on defense were the two D tackles, going up against guys who got their first starts against Navy. They're older players, but, you know, especially, you know, in Rocco's case, but it's like me when I got started my, you know, true senior year and fifth year senior year. I was old because I'd been there, but I hadn't played a lot of football at that point. And so there's only certain things, passing off twists, identifying pressures, understanding how much help to actually give or receive in a certain situation that you can experience in game speed and then go back and correct on that. I think you've seen both guards get a lot better already as the season's gone along and certain things technically. I thought the Ohio State game actually had a lot of those really good moments, especially in one-on-one pass protection for those guys. But there were a couple moments where experience showed up against a veteran, really well-coached group on the other side for Duke and Mike Elko. They deserve a ton of credit for that. But, you know, I think that's an area that is going to, like you said, if you're looking for, well, how does it get better? It gets better with time and reps and that work under task together. We've been fortunate to still have, you know, knock on wood, the same five guys going and starting since the beginning of the season. And that goes such a long way in how you communicate through those things, both on the field and game day, when you're just trying to find solutions for products and the for problems immediately. And then also when you're watching the tape back the next week, when you're going over stuff as a unit, when you're hitting it in practice, hey, remember when this happened to us in the game? Yeah, all right, when we see something like this that these guys do similar next time, this is how we need to communicate it. This is what you can do to let me know. And so now you increase the efficiency of all the communication there. You get a little bit more used to, all right, I tried this in the game. This is the technique that we've been coached by for since training camp, since going back into this offseason. Here's how I got to tweak it a little bit when I'm actually seeing, you know, Dwayne Carter bearing down on me with all the strength that he's got in the middle and what's got to change. So Live Bullets gives you so much great feedback and stuff to work with, and these guys have already been putting a lot of that on display.
Yeah, I agree. I thought the Ohio State game, the offensive line actually played really well.
Very well.
Relative to the opponent. Like, but that made the Duke game a bit of a surprise to me because I thought they would sort of take that and move forward with it. And then Mike Elko, I think, sort of, I was interested about your thoughts on Jared Parker here, because I think Mike Elko sort of got ahead of Jared Parker on the call sheet, and Parker couldn't quite figure out where to go with it. What, you know, six games in, he's not a first-time offensive coordinator, but certainly first-time at this level. And I'm not sure that I look at Notre Dame's offense and think, like, this is what they're good at yet. Do you see sort of flashes of, like, their identity offensively and just – your thoughts on Jared Parker through six games?
Yeah, I think Jared's taken a lot, and to his credit, right, coming into a room that already has things it does really well and did really well, and an identity. Notre Dame, you know, we've heard Marcus Freeman say it how many times? We're an O-line, D-line program, yeah. And especially at Notre Dame, you're tight end you. I don't know if I had on the bingo card, you know, Mitch coming in and doing what he's done so far this season, but he has filled the boots of tight end you remarkably. I mean, back-to-back weeks with catches that are going to go on every season-end highlight reel in both these games. But he's leaned into that. And, like, I mean, honestly, God, like, Eli Reardon coming back, I really hope he's healthy and good, we could see legitimate 14 personnel packages. Like, you could legitimately put four quality tight ends in the field and do some fun stuff, but he's leaned into that identity, right? Multiple tight end sets, run downhill, duo encounter, like all the stuff that we've seen from Notre Dame for a while that we saw with Notre Dame under Tommy. He's leaned into that while also integrating some of the downfield passing stuff with a receiver core that is green, that's still trying to find a true number one, but has, when healthy, taken a lot of young guys. And you mentioned it with Rico, like, we saw the communication errors and some of the errors in certain moments that just come with a guy playing more football than he'd been used to, right? That pre-snap penalty where he split out wide and isn't getting the play in right away, because it's just more than he's been used to so far. Coach Parker and this offense have done a really good job at getting guys into roles and modes they're comfortable with. We've seen it in the running back room to an extent with how they've used those guys. And so I think there's a good understanding of those things. And by and large, it hasn't looked like a coordinator going in and calling his offense for the first time meaningfully at this level with as much newness around him between the quarterback and some other parts as there's been. So I think it's been impressive. I think on the other side, like you said, it was a bad combination of personnel wise without, like, I think Jaden Thomas, even still super underrated with all the things that he does within the body and offense. Like, they've been using him like a pseudo tight end since last year. And outside of just the blocking willingness, also what you can do then formationally with a guy that versatile, pretty good, pretty reliable stuff. Jaden Greathouse very early on has come in and in the short area passing game become the same thing. And so, yeah, they got off schedule a little bit because Duke's D tackles won a few more of those interior battles than we counted on. And now all of a sudden, when Mike gets you into those third and medium, third and distance galaxy brain stuff, like, we still, I said to someone the other day, you still see DNA from Mike Elko's defense going through Notre Dame now. Like, I understand it's been multiple coordinators since then, but a lot of the third down packages have a lot of the same stuff to them and have for a while, even when Clark was there after the fact. Like, you could still see some of the same idea of how they use linebackers and sub packages. Even though Notre Dame's seen it, it's high-end stuff, and you had really good guys running it. Like, I think because it's Duke and because we're new to them being good, people nationally and otherwise are going to underrate just how flat-out good some of those guys are on Duke's D-line and what a good scheme they were running there. So it was a tough challenge, and Notre Dame was banged up and just, you know, had a good coach get a couple over on him in certain spots. Yep. It's, you know, it's the ultimate bear. Sometimes the bear gets you, and sometimes you eat the bear.
You mentioned Tommy. I was on the phone with someone right before we hit record here, wondering if Notre Dame would have put out a video like that with Tommy Reese as their OC. I actually think if he has the Sam Hartman as his quarterback,
he wouldn't have, Reese has never said golly before.
He's never said golly. He said some other stuff, but I don't know if he'd be saying that other stuff if he had a quarterback like Sam Hartman, which he could probably use at his current job now. I wanted to get you out on this. I don't know if Pete had any other questions. I don't know how much you've watched Louisville. They're obviously undefeated. I think they've surprised a lot of people with how well they've both defended and ran the ball, just based on Jeff Brohm's coaching DNA. What do you see from them? How do you see this game playing out?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I mean, and this is the classic thing with Notre Dame. I wouldn't look too far back at the game from last week. It seemed like they got caught looking ahead a little bit. Obviously, Notre Dame knows all how weird it can get going and playing a game down in Raleigh. Watching that quarterback situation with Brennan deteriorate before
our eyes.
Got benched. Yeah. I mean, that was as wrong as I've been on any take I had going into this season. Was I thought Brennan Armstrong and Robert Ornai getting back together was going to bear great fruit.
You would raise my hand. Yeah, we're all guilty of that one.
Stunned. So I but that game really kind of a, you know, rock fight, for lack of a better term, not what you would expect for Brohm's offense that we all saw at Purdue. Jack Plummer, a quarterback that Notre Dame saw in the Cal game. So, you know, familiarity there, but I'd expect them to be ready. Like, Brohm's another one, really good coach, guy who's going to have them ready to go. But for Notre Dame, I think you're hopefully a receiver room getting healthy again at the right time goes a long way. And this should be one where I'd imagine a little added motivation, like for all the things that I've said are understandable reasons why the Notre Dame offense had a little bit of a difficult time up front against Duke. You got to come out and flex in this game. So I'd imagine there's a reestablishing of the identity that's going to go on here in a lot of ways. But, and then on the other side, man, like, Notre Dame's defense just consistently awesome. I get they got worn down a little bit in the second half. Part of that is Duke solid up front and simple formula. When you got a quarterback that's as capable a part of your rushing attack as Riley Leonard was, but for the vast majority of that game, and Sam Hartman said it over and over again, they went out there and just stoned those dudes at every turn. So different challenge, different offensive style this week, but I'd imagine Notre Dame's defense has earned the benefit of the doubt at this point for me.
All right, last thing. If Notre Dame runs the table or goes 10-2, like, what happened? Why were they able to do that? And you know, maybe I'll put you on the 11-1 spot because
that's a big difference. We're talking
more of a reach, a reach to get there. But like, what do you think happens if Notre Dame wins out from here?
I mean, I think you handle business more or less. Like, I think after this last week, we saw that USC defense going to be a lot of points available in that game. Like, you should be able to go out there, and especially with your offensive style, tilt the game in your favor because you can control the ball and keep it out of Caleb Williams' hands just naturally based on how you live and that defense. There's easy yards. Clemson offensively, you know, there's not really a ton that scares you. I know that freshman receiver's coming on a bit for them right now, but this is as confident as you felt going into a matchup with Clemson ever heading into this year, even on the road. So you handle business there. And then I think by and large, just keep doing what you've been doing, you know, for the defense. Sack production starting to catch up with the pressure production, I think, would go a long way in that, because that leads to more turnover opportunity plays like we saw come up for Notre Dame. You swinging the turnover margin against Duke in the Elko era, no easy task. And so if those things continue that way and Sam Hartman continues to play clean football, I understand people are hung up on the goose egg in the interception column. Keep taking risks. Like, it's not like he hasn't put the ball in harm's way before. I want to see them keep pushing and taking risks. Like, you're going to need, you know, Tobias Merriweather probably to step up and be a more consistent deep threat for you. I know that's been an if for a while now on campus, but I think if those combination of things come and happen, the DNA of the rest of the program is kind of there at this point.
That was actually the other most revelatory thing from that video. J.D. Bertrand going in the final drive saying on the sideline, we're +1 in the turnover margin. We need to be +2 to win. And sure enough, they get it and clinch a victory with that. We'll get you out on this. Thanks so much for joining us, Mike. You'll be in Athens this week, I believe, for the Georgia-Kentucky game. Another battle of unbeatens. Should be a dogfight. No pun intended. I look forward to seeing you down the road here. Thanks, Mike.
Excited to get barked at. Can't wait.
Three-man rush. Sam stands in, runs out to his right on the 50, steps up. He could run, runs across the 40, 35, 30, and he got it.
Yes!
He got there.
Yes!
He got to the 29. 41 seconds left. Hands off to Estime up the middle. Keeps his
feet. Come on!
Running. He'll do it. He'll score. 5. Touchdown, Irish. Audric Estime puts Notre Dame back on top.
Leonard has 4 pass catchers to his right. 4-man rush. Steps up.
Ball. Hit. Ball comes out. Ball on the 25-yard line. Notre Dame's got it. Howard Cross knocked the ball out as Riley Leonard tried to step up, and the Fighting Irish recover.
Fumble and recovered by Notre Dame. First down.
That was Mike Golic Jr. We thank him for joining the show. A lot of good insight, Pete, as an offensive lineman, as a former player dealing with the cumulative effects of the night games. I thought, honestly, that was maybe the most insightful part just from his experiences about how to handle
it. Yeah. I really hadn't thought about it in terms of like the routine being actually a positive opposed to the lack of sleep being a negative. Cause I know that's how it feels for me. It's going down to Louisville and it will catch up to you at some point. But they got to get 2 more of these in and then they're off. And then it's 2 on, 1 off, 2 on, to close out the season. So I just don't know if Louisville is going to be the night where they run out of gas, due to the nature of the start of the season, but you know, maybe that actually happened last weekend and they won the game anyway.
Right.
That might be a way to look at it. So yeah, I thought that was interesting. I wanted to get an offensive lineman's take on Howard Cross because like he's not physically imposing, but like you watch the games and like he's just discarding centers and guards like they're not even participating. So it's that part of the game is fascinating because the blitz packages that Elko drew up there was a really good story on The Athletic. We have sort of an X's and O's guy who broke down Elko's pressures before the game and how he likes to sort of manipulate the offensive line. And that was exactly what Elko did during the game. So that was pretty fun to watch. And I think that when Jared Parker talks this week, I'll be curious to sort of hear his take on, all right, did Elko sort of just get ahead of me on the play card? Cause I think that it felt like that watching the game.
Yeah. He's a hell of a coach. He's really, really good. It was interesting to hear Mike Golic Jr.'s takes on that. And to go back to the night game routine, you know, I do wonder, right? Like, to your point, does it catch up to them? You know, Louisville played a night game and they have an extra day to prepare. Duke had the night game against Clemson. Ohio State's Ohio State. They're ready for any stage. They're used to being in that spotlight. So I do wonder if there's advantage, disadvantage here. Probably not. But to hear that routine, I thought was pretty enlightening. I just wonder, yeah, where it has to catch up to you at some point, even if it's not on game day. And that's where I wonder if that wears you. Like, you look at that schedule and you're like, gee, bye before Pittsburgh and bye before Wake. Like, don't want to say that's unnecessary, because any time's a good time for the bye, and I'm sure we'll hear those questions at press conference in due time. But yeah, it'd be a lot better if it was ahead of USC or ahead of Clemson, or, you know, one of those other major games. And even the games that we thought might be minor, looking like they're going to be pretty, in one case already was a pretty tough game so far. I do not have a good read on this Louisville team. You know, I thought, obviously, Jeff Brohm was the guy they were going to get when Scott Satterfield left. His teams have a habit, at least they did at Purdue, of, you know, getting one or two really big wins a year that no one saw coming, Ohio State among them. They also would lose some games they probably had no business losing. One thing that's been different about this team, at least from what I can tell, Jeff Brohm, never really a fan of the run game, never really committed to it. I covered their opener, Purdue's opener last year against Penn State. If I think Purdue called 13 pass plays on their final 14 plays across the last three possessions when they had the lead. Like, they should have won that game. They gave Sean Clifford to Penn State one more chance by giving the ball back. They lost. That has not been the case so far. And part of that is they have Juwan Jordan, who's looked like one of the better running backs in the country so far. I don't know how he'll fare against Notre Dame's defensive front, but it is a little bit different for Louisville. It's a sellout game. I believe the 2019 game was the biggest crowd in Louisville history. It would not surprise me at all if this one tops that. Again, primetime, ABC, Joe Test on the call. So, like, it's probably going to be a close game, because everything Joe Test touches, other than the Coach Prime Oregon game, tends to go to overtime. So it'll be very interesting in that regard. But they are 5-0. Their over-under coming in this year, I thought, was a obnoxiously high 8.5 until I looked at their schedule and saw, you know what, they probably will be favored in at least 9 of those games. Even the Miami game they get this year is a week after Miami plays Florida State. So that's a good situational spot for Louisville. But for the purposes of this week, I'm going to let you predict first, because you've been doing whatever you've been telling me. You haven't been fading me. And I guess it worked out for both of us last week, because they did technically
cover. No problem.
They covered and went under, like we both predicted. But I want you to go first this time while I still think about my final score.
Yeah. What is the over under on this one?
53.5.
Okay. I like the under, and I like Notre Dame to cover. Jack Plummer, I was shocked that he is 13th nationally in pass efficiency rating against FBS competition.
Third in the ACC.
And Sam Hartman is 10th. I would never confuse Jack Plummer with Sam Hartman, especially if you watch the end of the NC State game. The pick he threw in the end zone was just atrocious. Something that you would expect from a freshman quarterback, not a guy starting against Notre Dame for the third time at three different schools. So I like Notre Dame 31-13. I don't think Louisville has sort of the horses on the lines to hold up in the way that Duke did, at least on the defensive line. And I'm not saying Louisville is untalented anyway. Number nine, their defensive end, I think it's Ashton Jelode, is like legit. I think he's got 5 sacks already this season, but I would still take Joe Alt and Blake Fisher over him. They've gone against Jack Sawyer and JT Tuliolamau, and I thought that Notre Dame basically played them to a draw, if not won. So I think Notre Dame's offense will get back to putting up points this weekend after a couple blips against really good defense. Some of that depends on Jaden Thomas and Jaden Greathouse being available. It sounds like they both will play. And I'd like to see a little bit more of Jeremiah Love. You know, I think he's the best athlete they have at the offensive skill positions. When he touches the ball, you're like, this might be a touchdown at all the time. And I don't feel that way about anybody else on the offense, even though they've scored plenty of touchdowns. So I go Notre Dame 31-13. They get to 6-1 heading to USC. It would be great if USC could take care of business against Arizona. So you've got USC Notre Dame next week and Washington, Oregon next week. I mean, that's like,
there's a reason Washington, Oregon is at 3:30 and not prime.
That is a great college football weekend. And Notre Dame will be a part of it again, similar to as they were against Ohio State. But I just don't like Louisville. They're 5-0. I get it. Their wins are Georgia Tech, who's terrible. Indiana, who's terrible. Murray State, who's FCS. Boston College, terrible. And NC State, who is trending towards really bad. There's nothing in there that you'd be like, okay, I know what Louisville's about. Because anytime they've played a real defense, they've really struggled to move the ball. And Notre Dame is much more than a real defense. So I go 31-13 Notre Dame.
I will go 28-21 Notre Dame. I don't think it'll be that close. I think it's more like 20-14 and Louisville scores late. I don't know what the first half overs don't come out, I think, till later in the week, but I think both teams are going to come out firing. I think Louisville absolutely will, because that's in Jeff Brohm's nature. I think it's in this program's nature when they have a stage like this to really let it loose offensively. Beware of the trick plays. You've always got to be aware of that with Jeff Brohm. Like, he looks like one of the more fun coaches in the country to play for if you're on offense, because you're just going to do something every, like, I remember after his first year there, I sat down with a bunch of people, first year at Purdue, excuse me, sat down with a bunch of people and I was talking, I think it was Marcus Bailey, linebacker on that team. And I'm like, what's it like going up against these guys in practice? And he's like, oh, our first spring game, Jeff Brohm gave a whole pregame speech about, it's a spring game, we're not going to show anything, you know, we're just going to, you know, run the base and blah, blah, blah. And they came out with all these trick plays against the defense. I didn't see it coming. And he's like, oh, so this is how it's going to be, huh? So I think that is that's in Jeff Brohm's nature. I mean, I could see this being a 14-14 game at halftime and Notre Dame breaks away in the second half and just wears them down. Not unlike the last time they played there in 2019. Yep. Obviously a much better Louisville team than that team, and probably a better Notre Dame team than that Notre Dame team as well. But I've got 28-21. I think it's close for a half. I think Notre Dame just, you know, I think the rare case where playing on this stage and going through the, not going through the motions, but the routine that you know, Golic alluded to earlier is going to work in their favor. I think Louisville's start will be more kind of adrenaline fueled and kind of wear off down the stretch there. Notre Dame's a better team. They're the better defensive team. They're the more physical team. And I just think that ultimately, short of a meltdown and some crazy turnovers, is really, really tough to overcome when you have what Louisville has, which has been good enough to be undefeated so far. But to your point, not the, there's a reason they're only ranked this week at 5-0. They're kind of in there based on the record and based on default. So I hope it's a good environment. I hope it's a good game. I'm sure it'll be a good environment. I hope it's a good game. I've got Notre Dame so covering, because it's 6.5 and the under again. Because I also think we'll get into this next week. Like, this defense, I don't want to say they've played so far above their head, but they played so much better than I had any reason to expect them to play, that you wonder if there's a bill come and due on the other end when they play Caleb Williams or some truly elite offense down the stretch.
All right, well, that's it for this episode of The Independent. As always, you can find the podcast, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. Subscribe, rate, review. It helps more people find out about The Independent. You can also watch the show on YouTube if you so desire to see our beautiful faces. Again, all of it helps. Rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. It helps more people find our show. We appreciate that. So until Saturday night into Sunday morning, yet again, for our post-game show after Louisville, he's Matt, I'm Pete. You've been listening to The Independent.